Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
All right, my friends. All right. We're going to finish up, Mirtz Hashem, our first section today, at least in the text. We might have some other commentators still to see, but we'll finish up the last little bit of our story. So let us, it's been a couple of weeks, let's jump back in. We're in the back half of the story. If you just want to look at your single sheets, just to go over the text of the story, we are in part two of this entire first episode. The boys have grown up and became what they became. Yaakov becoming a wholesome man, abiding in tents, and Esav becoming a hunter. We've discussed the fact that Yitzhak loved Esav and that his wife Rivka loved Yaakov. The last thing that we did, before we get into the last series of verses, the last thing that we did was Rav Hirsch's commentary, a little bit of a scathing rebuke, which he said and wrote was based on the sages, that the fact that the boys did not go into their different ways until they hit 13 was a result of the fact that despite the fact that latent in them, within them, were different characteristics and different approaches and different needs, they were treated the same until they hit 13. And while the way that they were treated worked for a Yaakov, it did not work for an Esav. And in his poetic language, which we saw last week, every day that would go by being forced to be in the classroom was another day in which he would yearn and desire to break free from the shackles of that which was really not for him. And what eventually happened was, instead of just breaking free from the shackles of the classroom, he broke free from the entire package deal, throwing out the baby with the bathwater, if you will. And he discussed, you know, the requirements of the parents, both in terms of the fact that we see Yaakov and Yitzchak and Rivka loving different children and treating them the same, and he gave his whole episode, a whole discussion on that. Okay, we're up to the last couple of verses. Let's start with verse 29. Vayozid Yaakov nozid. Yaakov simmered a stew. Vayovo Esav min hasadeh v'hu ayef. And Esav comes in from the field and he was exhausted. And as we mentioned, as we went through the verses for the first time, we'll do it again right now. We'll need to ask the question, as the sages are going to do, why was he tired? What's the significance of the fact that he's exhausted? Was it normal? Was that a regular occurrence in which he would come in from the field and be exhausted, or was something going on? The second question we would ask is, why is Yaakov stewing up a stew? What's taking place? Like, we're getting these little tidbits of information. The Torah tells us Yaakov simmers a stew, Esav comes in from the field, he's exhausted. What other information do we need to know about this story? Let's read one more verse, and then we'll start reading some of the commentators. Esav says to Yaakov, Haliteni no min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. Pour into me now some of that very red stuff. Ki ayef anochi. Very gruff way of speaking. Haliteni no. We'll see in Rashi where the translation gets that there's pour it into me. I'm just going to like open up my mouth and just shovel it in there as fast as you can. And he doesn't even call it by its name, by a stew. He refers to it as just red stuff, min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh, from that which has that red color, ki ayef anochi, because I am very tired. Al kain kara shemo Edom. And then the Torah says, therefore, his name was called Edom. Edom from the word Adom, from red. So we have two namings of Esav. When Esav is born, he was also reddish. But that's not where his name came from. Nobody named him Red. They named him Esav because he was asu. He was already made. He was formed. He was developed with a hairy body in a way that he was so healthy, it was as if he was already fully formed. And now, later in life, and we'll see a little bit later how old they are at this time, they're clearly into their teens, if not older than that, he receives a new name. He receives the name of Edom, which also has to do with red. So both episodes of Esau's name have the red hue in it. Here he's referred to as Edom, but not because of his coloration, but because of the way he speaks in relation to the food. Very strange way of naming a child, giving him a new nickname, that because he spoke in such a gruff manner of pour into me, shovel it in, that red stuff, they began to call him Edom. And Edom is a name which he's going to be known as throughout the rest of Chumash. And even until today in rabbinic literature, Edom is the reference to Western civilization. The exile that we are in right now is known as Golus Edom. It is the Ace of Golos that we are in right now, and it is stemming from the Roman Greek Empire, and which eventually manifested itself in today's Western civilization. That is known as the Golos of Edom. And one of the reasons why we're spending so much time on this story and the title of this course of the eternal sibling rivalry of Yaakov and Esav is we are in it. We need to understand this story because we are still living through it. The exile that we are waiting to get out of is the exile of Esav and his descendants of the people of Edom. Okay, those are the verses. So we have a couple of questions which we'll need to address as far as we get to that. Now, what's going to happen, as we're familiar with, Yaakov is going to respond with a request of the selling of the birthright to this episode. So let's just get a little background. We'll stop for a moment and see the comment of Rashi, Ramban, refers on these first two verses of Yaakov simmering up a stew, Esav coming in exhausted and demanding of Yaakov to pour into him his red stuff because he is exhausted. So let's start with Rashi. Okay, let's take a Rashi, page 279, in the middle of the Rashi, beginning verse 29, Vayotzed, that Yaakov boiled up a stew. Rashi points out that the word Vayotzed means a lashon of bishul, a language of cooking, and therefore, so we see Yaakov cooking something, and Esav comes in and he was exhausted. Why was he exhausted, says Rashi, from the sages, from murdering? As you say, ki ayufa nafshi lohorgi, my soul is exhausted by murderers. So Rashi, quoting from the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, borrowing the pasuk which puts together whatever the context there in the pasuk was, it's as if my soul has been exhausted from dealing with murderers. So Rashi puts together, the sages saw that if he's tired, why is the Torah telling us he's tired? What's the significance of his being tired? It was from murder. Now, what's the significance of Rashi telling us this? That we see that Esav is going off in a different direction. That the sages were bothered by the question that we asked, why do we need to know that he was exhausted? Is that significant? Is it different? Did he always come home from the field exhausted? It seems that there was something peculiar about this particular incident. And Rashi says it actually was the beginnings of Esav going off in a different direction, in particular in regards to murder. So what does he say in verse 30? He says, pour into me. Rashi says, this means, I will open my mouth and pour a lot into it. Rashi says it's the same language that the Mishnah uses, ein ofsin es hagamol, we may not stuff a camel on Shabbos, but we may mal'itino, so we may pour food into its mouth. So that the sages use the same language that Esav used to describe pouring food into the camel's mouth is the way that Esav spoke. I'm just going to open up my mouth and shovel it in. And what does he want shoved in? That very red stuff. Rashi points out, red lentils. On that day, Avraham had died. Why is Yaakov making a lentil stew? Because he was cooking a dish for his father, for Yitzchak, who was going to be sitting Shiva, for his father, for Avraham. So that the grandfather of Avraham and Yitzchak, of Yaakov and Esav died on that day, Avraham. So that Yitzchak, their father, is in mourning, and Yaakov is preparing for him a lentil soup. Why a lentil soup? We'll see in a moment. Why is this the day that Avraham dies? Says that Rashi, Shelo Yir, that he should not see his grandson Esav depart for bad ways. For that would not be the Seva Tova, the good old age that the Holy One, blessed be He, had promised him. Avram had been promised that while your descendants will go and descend into a land that's not theirs and be a stranger for 400 years, you, Avraham, Hashem had promised him, will live to a ripe old age and die the Seva Tova, with good age. Seeing his grandson off the derech, seeing his grandson go to inappropriate behavior, would not be a fulfillment for Avraham of a good old age. And the fikach, therefore, the sages say, the Holy One, blessed is He, cut his year short by 5. Avraham died 5 years prior to when he otherwise might have. How do we know that? Rashi says, because Yitzchak lived 180 years. Flipping over the page. And this one, Avraham, lived for only 175. So the Medrash says, looking at all of these factors together, the Medrash says that Avraham lives 175 years old. Yitzchak, his son, lives 180. Yaakov is making a lentil soup on the day that Esav comes in exhausted. sages put it all together and said it's all one story. The reason why Esav is coming home exhausted is because he's gone out to the ways of murder. Because of that, Avraham shouldn't live to see the ayefos, the exhaustion of Esav as he goes off to inappropriate behavior. He dies 5 years, 175, 180. Sages always talk about being within 5 years of one's parents or one's child age as a time that one can expect to live, or they put a lot of effort in describing the ages that the avos in the Chumash lived. And since Avram died 5 years shorter, earlier than his son Yitzchak, they put it all together. He died today. That's why Yaakov is making the lentil soup. Like, where is this all coming from? The one day out of the blue, Yaakov is making the lentil soup. Esav happens to be tired. It's all the same story. Avram had died. Because Esav is tired, Avram shouldn't see that. And that's why Yaakov is making his lentil stew. So Yaakov cooked lentils to provide food for the mourner. The Sudas Havra'ah. Filomo Adoshim. Why do we serve lentils or eggs? Or other round type foods, because they resemble a wheel, for mourning is a turning wheel in the world. The phrase the sages use, mourning, the concept of mourning is the wheel that turns. It is an element, a fact of life that everyone experiences. It is the coming and the going, as in the words of the prophets, a generation comes and a generation goes, and the water of the sea, the river flows to the sea. It's the way that things go. So we comfort the mourner with foods which symbolize the roundness of the circle of life and the process, the wheel that turns. So therefore, we already find reference to this from in the Chumash already. Yaakov cooking up this lentil soup because he was going to provide it for his father Yitzchak, who was in mourning for his father Avraham, so that he shouldn't see the exhaustion of Esav, which was caused by departing to the evil ways. And Esav comes in from the field, and he wants of that food that was being prepared for his father Yitzchak, mourning the loss of his grandfather for Avraham. Furthermore, one more thought. Just as lentils have no mouth, they have no opening, they have no beginning and no end, it's just a perfectly closed circle, so the mourner has no mouth, for he is forbidden to speak. Similarly, the mourner can't question, can't open up his mouth in speech, not only in his inability to question, but in his sadness. And therefore, the custom is to provide food for the mourner at the beginning of his food, meaning the first food he eats as a mourner after the funeral, either eggs, because they are also smoothly rounded and have no mouth. Similarly, the mourner has no mouth, as we say in Moed Katan. A mourner for the entire first 3 days of mourning does not respond with a greeting to any man when another has greeted him first. Someone says, hi, how are you? He doesn't respond, he doesn't respond, shalom aleichem, shalom. There's halachas of a mourner. He doesn't respond with a greeting in the way that most people or normal people and healthy people under regular circumstances would. He's in mourning. He doesn't respond such. So the two reasons why we give them these rounded foods as their first meal, be it lentils, be it eggs, is A, to show the wheel of life, the turning of the cycle of the way of the world. And that just like this food has no mouth, it has no opening, so too does the mourner not have a opening to be able to speak. All the more so is it true, says Rashi, that he does not initiate inquiry into another's welfare during that period. Meaning, even if you ask a mourner how he's doing, he's not supposed to respond, and he certainly shouldn't ask someone else, how are you doing? You know, the way the sages set up the Shiva house is a little different than the way that it's actually practiced, because most people don't know what to do and what not to do. But certainly one of the things that I always like to try to tell people when I'm involved in that is that we're actually here not even mentioning in terms of that the visitor is certainly not supposed to begin the conversation. He's supposed to wait if the mourner has any interest in speaking. There's a lot of halachas regarding talking in a Shiva house in terms of what the mourner should say or can't say and who can greet whom. And it is a place of mourning, and it should be there should be a certain atmosphere and environment in that. But in any case, those are all part of the reasons why those foods are served as the opening food, an egg or lentil or something round that doesn't have any particular mouth, so to speak. Okay, that's Rashi's understanding of putting together the package as to what do we do with all of these facts. Like in the middle of nowhere, Yaakov's making a stew, Esav comes home tired. Is this different than usual? Yes, it is different than usual. He's making a stew because Avram had died, and he died because Esav is tired. And this is a unique tired. It's not a tired because he was hunting, it's a tired because he's been involved in other sorts of things, which again, the sages connect to murder, and therefore Avram at 175 has died without having to see or experience that. Yeah, let's take a look. There's one brief Ramban I want you to see. In the Ramban, in your blue sheets, on page 10, the bottom of page 10, the Ramban says, Min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh, some of that very red stuff. The Ramban explains, why did he call it red stuff instead of the lentil stew? Says the Ramban, the stew was reddish, either from the lentils which were red, or because Yaakov had blended it with red ingredients. Esav did not know what it was, so he called it by the name red stuff. So a rather mundane, if you will, Ramban commenting on why the lentil stew was red, either because they were red beans or because he added red stuff, either way. But what's significant is that we then name Esav based on that. Okay, so Yaakov has a stew. Who cares what color the stew is? Well, Esav says, pour that red stuff in, and they called his name Edom because of that. Why would they call his name Edom? Ramban says, the verse is stating that people scoffed at him because he sold a precious birthright for a bit of stew. So the Ramban is saying, even though the verse speaks in a language that's singular, which as we mentioned a few moments ago would imply who called him Edom, it was Yaakov, he was the only one there. The Ramban says, no, they called him Edom, it was a thing that became known, that for a reddish dish that you didn't even know what it was, basing himself on his previous card, it was just red. You know, ingredients mixed all together, and you said, I'm just going to open up my mouth, pour it in, and for that you sold a birthright.
But he hasn't
told
it yet.
Not yet, right? But so the Torah is telling us they're going to call him Edom because of what's about to come up in the story. But you're correct, we have not read that actually yet. Therefore, they called him Edom. They called him red stuff. You sold your birthright for that which you couldn't even identify what it was. And why did the Ramban make his first comment telling us it was beans or he added ingredients? Like, why does Ramban spend his time telling us why it was red? Because that's all part of the comment of, and that's, you don't even know what it was, whatever it was. And you say, just pour it in, this red stuff, and you sold your birthright for that. They started naming him that as a way of scoffing at him, for the guzzler and the gorger will become poor, basing on a verse in Proverbs. So, and that's what you sold it for, and that became, now we're going to see, the Ramban is going to comment later, which I don't know if we'll get to today or not, in terms of a question that we had raised. Does the Esav actually sell the birthright for the stew? Or does he sell it for money and Yaakov just is only willing to give him the stew if he'll sell it to him for money? This comment, the Ramban is already foreshadowing his approach, that he understands from the story that Esav actually sold the birthright for the pot of stew. And that's why the Torah makes it significant that they called him Edom. They were calling him something which was a disparaging way of saying, like, we're now going to call you based on the little stuff that you got for the sale of your birthright.
Is there significance with the color red besides just the red
lentils? So, my inclination is to say yes. Refersh is going to address it. We're about to see that. Even without seeing Refersh, it would sound like yes. In other words, the fact that we see when he was born, he was reddish. The fact that it comes up again and he identifies the food as red. The fact that we mentioned before that there's if a person is born under the mazel of, I think there's a mazel of something reddish, that you'll either be a shochet or a moel or a murderer or a butcher, something to do. There's for sure something there. I don't see neither Ramban nor Rashi spoke about it, but it would seem that Refersh is going to talk about it right now. Take a look. If you look at the back page of Refersh, all the way to the back page, verse 30, Ot, or Haliteni, pour into me, is to greedily, ever see where I am? Page 428, verse 30. Greedily to gulp down. It is not so much the dish itself as its color that attracts him. Refersh picks up on this point. He says, pour in that red stuff. There is something about the color that attracts Esav to this dish. It reminds him of the blood of a gasping, dying animal that delights his eye when his arrow has found its mark. Quickly give me some of that lovely red stuff. and he still boasted later on of his characteristic phrase and called himself Edom. Here we have a third approach. I would have said, simply reading the pasuk, it was Yaakov who called him Edom. The Ramban we just saw wrote, no, it was the people who would scoff at him and say, you sold your birthright for stew, you Edom. And Rav Hirsch says, it was Esav himself who was so proud of the sight of the gasping, dying animal and the red blood, and he saw the stew and he wanted it and gulped it down, that he himself, Al Kain Karash Shemo, and he's coming, I think, from the name, what it seems from the language of the pasuk, that it would be that, you know, the last object or pronoun in the pasuk is Esav is doing the action. So therefore, when the pasuk concludes, therefore he called himself, or he called his name Edom, was actually referring to Esav himself. And he himself named himself Edom in Refersh's language in a boasting of this characteristic phrase of that red stuff, reminding him of the death of the animal after his arrow has found its mark. Okay, fine. So that's the first two verses. That's Esav coming in from the field and demanding of Yaakov to pour into him this red stuff, the discolored lentils. In Refersh's language, of just that remind, he was interested more in what he saw in the redness of the dish, more than the dish itself. Okay, let's do a little bit more. Let's go on. Verse 31. So, what's Yaakov's response? What is Yaakov's response? Vayomer Yaakov, Michra Chayom es Bechoyrascha li. Yaakov responds, verse 31, sell as this day your birthright to me. Now, the obvious difficulty here is, we have a textual difficulty and a conceptual difficulty. The textual difficulty is, which word?
I think this day.
This day. What does that mean? Yeah. Let him just say, okay, sell me your birthright. You sell me the birthright, I'll give you the suit. So, what does he mean, kayom? Sell to me as this day. We'll see the commentators will have different connotations as to what he meant with that. And conceptually, we would have, it seems like Yaakov has been waiting for this opportunity, you know, seeing that Esav is going to be the one. Let me phrase it as a question. Do we tie this into what Rashi described to us about the uniqueness of the lentil stew and the exhaustion, that something happened on this day? On this day, Esav became a murderer, left the path of his grandfather and of his father. On this day, Avraham therefore died so that he shouldn't come to see it. Therefore, Esav is exhausted. And therefore, Yaakov says, I need to take over the firstborn status. Or has this been something that he's sort of been just waiting for and sitting on? But again, we have here, like, out of the blue, Esav comes in off of the out of the field. He's exhausted. He wants some stew, and Yaakov right away says, "Okay, sell me the birthright, kayom." So let's read a couple. Let's take two more verses, then we'll go back and see what Rashi has to say. So, what's Esav's response to Yaakov demanding of him to sell him the birthright? Vayomer Esav, hinei anochi holech lamus. Behold, I am going to die. V'loma zeli v'chora. So, of what use to me is this birthright?
How does he know he's going to die?
Excellent. What does it mean that he's going to die? What does it mean that he's going to die? Okay, either he's afraid he's going to be pursued.
He just knows that one day he'll die also.
Okay, well, everyone's going to die one day.
Right.
So, is that a reason to sell a birthright?
No. He doesn't know when he's going to die.
But that could be like a will.
Well, it's interesting that all of you are skipping over what I think would be the most basic. I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe not. Maybe that's why you're skipping over it. Could he mean, I'm going to die right now? I'm so hungry that I will die if I don't get any food?
Isn't it in the future?
That's more far-fetched.
You think it's more far-fetched?
Is that the future word? Is that verb?
You don't die from
that. Holei chlamus. Behold, I'm going to die. So Esav doesn't respond with, sure, I'll sell it to you, or no, I won't sell it to you. He responds with, I am going to die, so of what value to me is this birthright? Well, if Esav died, who would take over the status of the firstborn anyway?
Would it pass to the very next son?
Well, there's no one else.
To the grandson.
Whatever the status of the firstborn is, I mean, he's not going to be able to do it if he's not alive.
It dies with him.
Well, what does it mean to be the... Let's go back to the question we've asked, which really is going to encompass a lot of things. What does it mean to have the status of the firstborn? What are you entitled to because of that?
The birthright, if you're the firstborn.
What is a birthright? What do you get?
Inheritance. I don't know. People have said inheritance.
You become the leader. You become...
At any rate, you would also be the... the equivalent of the Kohen.
So we have, just putting out what we've just suggested right now, we have from a double inheritance, which is simply a very tangible, practical, the firstborn will get more stuff upon their father's death, to being the leader, the CEO of a family, which is a much more intangible type of quality, to much more of a spiritual concept of becoming the Kohen and that status. So all of those might or might not be encompassed in what Yaakov is asking for and what Esav is selling in regards to this birthright. So we'll pay attention as we go through now the commentators and what they have to say. What was at stake? What was being sold as this is taking place? Just as a parenthetical comment, if you paid attention to the Torah reading this past Shabbos, when Moshe is instructed by Hashem to stand before Paro for the first time, he's instructed to say, "Bini b'chori Yisrael." When Moshe is supposed to refer to the Jewish people, he's supposed to say, from God's perspective, "My firstborn children, the Jewish people." And Rashi comments on that, and when he used the words "Bini b'chori," my firstborn, my Jewish children, he was acknowledging God was the validity of the sale, that Yaakov had indeed become the status of the firstborn, and that when Moshe stands before Paro and uses the word, "Let my children, Bini Bechori, my firstborns, out," it was a reference to this episode, and that God is, so to speak, putting his stamp of approval upon the sale, that Yaakov had indeed become the Bechor and the firstborn.
Leadership in his
corner. So I throw that out there as we're going to now go through, as the comments are going to comment, well, what's being sold? What did he want? So that's all, keep that in mind, as you know, you have to have all the stories at your fingertips at all time as they go through and find the different references. Okay, one more verse, let's see what Rashi has to say. Vayomer Yaakov, so Esav, I don't know, what would you say from that? That's a yes or a no? Esav says, "I'm going to die. Of what value to me is this firstborn?" First status.
It's a yes.
It's a yes. Sounds like a yes?
Yeah.
So Yaakov doesn't take it as a yes alone. He says, "He shavali kayom. Swear to me as this day."
Another kayom.
Here we go again, right? Instead of just saying swear to me, again we have that language of as this day. Swear to me as this day. Vayishavalo, and Esav does. He swears to him. Vayimkor es b'choraso liYaakov, and he sold his birthright to Yaakov. Okay, let's see a little bit more Rashi. Rashi, verse 31. It's on page 280 in your Rashi sheets. You're going to get to the point when someone says to you, "Like Ramban, you're going to see blue." Someone's going to say reverse. You're going to see yellow. You're just going to have it. You're going to know. Says Rashi in the bottom of 280, 31. Sell as this day. How does Rashi understand the phrase "sell to me as this day"? As the Targum Unculus renders it, Kiyom Dilahain, as this day, meaning like the day, which is clear, so should you sell me the birthright with a clear, indisputable sale. Now, we're going to see Ramban is going to talk about this. Rashi understands from the Targum Unculus, in the Aramaic translation of the Torah, that the word Kiyom means clear as day. So that if as the day is clear, using a parable or analogy that's often used, clear as day, we use it in our English language until this day.
With no strings attached.
Right? Clear as day. Yeah. So that when Yaakov says, "I want you to sell to me in a way that there will be no way for you to ever question or go back on it, I want it to be as clear and indisputable as the day." Now, what does Rashi want? He wants the firstborn status, the birthright. Rashi comments, why? Since the sacrificial service is performed by the firstborns, Yaakov says, Ein Rasha Ze Kedai. This evil one is not worthy that he should bring up offerings to the Holy One. Blessed is he. Okay, now Rashi's going to have to keep this. Rashi's jumping right to the comments from the sages on a midrashic level. What is it that Yaakov is after? He sees that down the road, at some point, the firstborn is going to be the one to offer sacrifices to Hashem, and that Esav is not fit. He and his descendants, this Russia, this wicked one, could not, should not, cannot be the one to do so. So that I, he says to himself, must somehow purchase, get the rights of the firstborn from him, so that it should be brought to the sacrifices correctly by someone like me, and not like someone like him.
But he's overlooked
that. I know, this Rashi is only talking to his argument of it's inappropriate for someone like Esav to be the one to do it. This Russia, now this to me speaks to the comment that we made earlier of something happened on this day. There's a reason why this is on Yaakov's mind, that when his brother comes in from the field exhausted, that he right away jumps to and says, sell me your birthright. Because why is Esav exhausted? He's exhausted because he's been out murdering, which is why Avram died, which is why Yaakov's making the lentil soup, which is why Yaakov says, I can't have this guy being representing me in a family bringing their karbanos.
Well, I'm guessing that maybe because Avraham had died, in the back of Yaakov's mind is the realization that Yitzchak is going to die.
Well, it's certainly possible, and therefore someone, we need to have the mechanisms in place that this be done appropriately, and therefore I need to make sure it's not in the hands of my brother, the Russia, but that I have the rights and the knowledge and the ability to be the one to bring the karbanos. Okay, Narashi, continuing his approach that this is really about the karbanos and the sacrifice and the ability of the firstborn to be the one to offer them, continues that with Esav's response. Esav says, behold, I am going to die. Now Rashi is going to go again to the Midrashic interpretation. Says Rashi in the top of 281, look, I am going to die. The birthright of the firstborn is gradually wandering away, meaning, says Rashi, for the sacrificial service will not be performed by the firstborn for all time, because the tribe of Levi will take it. Rashi quotes here, number one, Asa says, what does it mean I'm going to die? It's allegorical to, it's not anyway going to have any value, because it's not always going to remain in the hands of the firstborn. So it has much less value, because anyway, by the time we get out of the desert, the firstborn will have lost the status of the priesthood and will have been given to the priests, so that the firstborns will not be the ones to offer the sacrifice, only the Kohen will. Furthermore, says Rashi, explaining what Asa's argument is, Asa says, what's the nature of the sacrificial service? Yaakov said to him, well, there are a lot of prohibitions, many severe punishments, death penalties are associated with it. For example, Yaakov says, you need to know, here are the ones that are included in the death penalty. Anyone who performs the service after having had wine to drink, those who perform the service having long hair, and he goes through the list. Esav says, in the way that Rashi, the sages read the conversation, Yaakov says, sell me the firstborn, sell me the birthright. Esav says, what's it about? Well, it's about being able to offer the sacrifices. Whoever holds the birthright is the one who serves in the temple to bring the sacrifices. Esav says, well, what's that about? Yeah, it's like serious stuff. I mean, if you've had anything to drink, you die. If your hair has been grown and not shaven appropriately, you die. If you walk in a state of impurity, you're going to die. It's like real serious. And Asa says, I'm going to die on account of it. I can't handle all of those laws. That's not for me and for my people. In Cain, what then is there in it that I would want? So that the sages read the story. What does it mean? Hine anochi holech lamut. Behold, I am going to die. He means, I'm going to die on account of the responsibility of the sacrifices. For what value? Lama li zeh b'chora. What do I need this for? I'm not interested nor capable of maintaining the requirements of being able to offer the sacrifices. It's only going to bring death upon me and my family. You take it. I don't want it. Now, this is not pshat. This is not the simple translation. This is the Rashi quoting from the Medrash, the way the sages see the dialogue between Yaakov and Esav, and it was a dialogue about the rights of the firstborn to offer sacrifices in the Beit HaMikdash. What is this about? Who brings the carbon? Yaakov said, it can't be this Rasha, my brother Esav. So he offers to buy it. Esav says, what's it about? Yaakov tells him all of the death penalties associated with it, and Esav says, I'm going to die. I don't want this. Go right ahead. You take it. That's how Rashi reads the story based on Chazal. So far, so good? Says Ravan, flip to your blue pages. Bottom of page 11. Going to get two interpretations of the word as this day. So the Ramban begins by quoting Rashi, that it meant clear as day, that you should sell it with a clear and unconditional sale. And then the Ramban presents his own interpretation on the bottom of page 11. Its plain meaning, however, is at this time. What does it mean to sell to me as this day? It means today, right now, at this time. Not describing a clarity of where you cannot, an unconditional type of sale, but it means kayom, right now, meaning I'm not saying, let's talk about, will you sell me your house? So sure, and it means it's going to be a 4-week process, and you're going to look into it, and you're going to check it out, and you're going to hire this person, and that person, and that paperwork. No, kayom. Now, I want it to be sold right here on the spot. These are the terms, these are the conditions, take it or leave it. That's how the Ramban is learning what the phrase is. When Yaakov said, it's sale to me as this day, that means right now. Now, he re-examines Unkelus's interpretation. Rashi, when he said it meant clear as day, Rashi was giving us his interpretation of what he thought the Targum Unkelus meant. And Ramban, on the top of the next page, on page 12, has a little different interpretation. That he thought it meant, in the second line, that because the sale of the birthright was to take effect only after the death of their father, when the inheritance would become available to them, therefore Yaakov said, sell me the birthright effective on whichever day it falls out. And that the word, sell it to me like this day, means I want it to be sold today for whenever it will become applicable, which means that what is it really about? It was about the inheritance, not about the way Rashi quoted the service in the temple of the offering of the karbanos. So when he said, sell it to me, kayom, as this day, either meant, according to Rashi, clear as day, according to Rabban, it meant right now. And according to the Ramban understands what the Targum of Unkelus translated as, meaning, sell it to me for when it will be applicable, meaning after the death of our father, when we will actually take the inheritance, and that's when it will actually have the impact, that's when I want it to be sold for. Okay, flip the page, I want to see the end of this piece of the Ramban. It's at the bottom of page 13. Starting with the brackets and the non-bold, Ramban now turns to another point. The narrative seems to suggest that Esav sold his birthright to Yaakov for a portion of stew, and the Ramban notes an alternative interpretation. There are those who say, the Ramban quotes several of the other commentators, that the price of the birthright was not the stew. Rather, the verse relates that when Esav asked to eat in his exhaustion, that Yaakov said to him, first, sell me the birthright for money, and then you can eat. That according to these commentators that the Ramban is quoting, what was the price of the birthright? I don't know, however much money they determined between the two of them. And in his great anxiousness to eat, Esav answered him, of what use to me is the birthright, let it hereby be sold to you, I'll be happy to do that, I really just want to get to the food. He then took an oath, and they sat down to eat and drink. However, the verse does not specify the price that Esav paid, and Ramban concludes and says, this is not my opinion. Meaning the Ramban quotes, the Rashbam is the person who quotes, this was one of Rashi's grandsons, that in the context of the story, really Esav sold the birthright for money, it was a sale, and Yaakov was just holding back, giving him the stew until the sale was completed. The Ramban says, I don't like that interpretation. And as we saw already from his comment, why the Ramban said, why do they call him Edom? Because people used to scoff at him and say, you're the one who sold your birthright for a pot of stew. The Ramban says, that fact that the Torah tells us they called him Edom is enough for me that I understand from this story that that's indeed how the sale went down. That the sale of the stew was for the birthright itself. And that was the price tag that Yaakov paid for the birthright was the actual stew. But it's of note to see in the Ramban that there were clearly other commentators who believed that there was a separate sale of money and then the stew came afterwards. Okay, one last Ramban, and then that will be it for today. The Ramban says, what does it mean that Yaakov wanted him to swear? It's on the next page, page 14. When Esav said of what use to me is a birthright, he implied that I do not want it. I do not want the birthright. So Yaakov said to him, swear to me regarding the veracity of your claim that you will never want it and will never inherit it. And that's what he swore to him. And after this, he sold it to him. He gave him the price or the stew, whichever interpretation you go with. Ramban favored, he gave him the actual stew that Esav had asked for as his payment. So what did it mean that he wanted him to swear? Again, he wanted him to swear that he will never go back and claim that he has a right to the birthright, or that he'll never contest it again, as he says in that last comment.
Isn't swearing considered not good?
We shy away from swearing because of the severity of not fulfilling the oath, which is why we try not to do so. Better than, as the pasuk says in Mishnah, better not to vow or swear to something and not fulfill it than never to have sworn in the first place. So, but it was used as in the Gemara, we find oaths were very common practice in terms of in a court, in terms of verifying someone's claim. It was, because it was taken so seriously, because the penalty of not fulfilling it was so severe, there was this understanding of that people had of that, so it was used as a form of, giving your word with a very serious way in the form of an oath. Avraham made Eliezer swear to go find a wife that he would, abide by the guidelines that he was giving him. So it's certainly a common way, and that's why we shy away from it, because it has very severe consequences. So we try to use it very, very sparingly. But that's why you do find it as a method in which Yaakov believed that this Russia Esau, but if he swore, he swore to it. And you just see the way that they sort of viewed it. Okay, we have one last verse to do. We'll finish that up in this part of the episode, and then we will move on.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.